You have to take a long-term perspective. And I have to remind myself of that sometimes. You have to take a long-term perspective. It can't just be about the now and the today and the stereotypical, what can I do to get you to buy the car today or kind of stuff. And if you believe in that, word gets around and it will come back to you.
Hey gang, we're here at NADA 2024, the Dealer Playbook Podcast. I'm sitting with my friend Alex Lawrence. He is the founder of EV Auto. We're going to be talking all about EVs and more importantly, how he's taken a business from the ground up and built market share in his market for EVs. Stay tuned.
The car business is rapidly changing and modern car dealers are meeting the demand. I'm Michael Cirillo, and together we'll explore the best strategies, ideas, and tools to create a thriving life in and out of the business. This is the Dealer Playbook.
Alex, man, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast.
Yeah, man, good to be here. Good to see you.
There's a small group here at our table. They have all sorts of questions about EVs, and I was like, guys, you got to wait. We're going to answer these questions on the podcast. You've had tremendous business experience. Bring me into, because if I remember correctly, not to jump the gun here, a PhD?
Yeah. Yeah, which is, I mean, kind of weird for this business, I think.
Yeah, so, it's unique because it's not, what does it stand for in automotive? It's Papa had a dealership.
Yeah, I've heard that.
That's not the case.
Yeah.
What's your PhD in?
Business from Oklahoma State University.
Oklahoma State University. And leading up to before owning a dealership, what were some of the business ventures that you were involved in?
First half of my career was in franchising, which is interesting because, you know, franchises are a big part of this industry.
Yeah.
Just kind of a hustle mentality, got involved in some startups in the restaurant industry primarily, but then in other service brands, did that for a little over a decade, had some good learning, some modest successes, just learned how to run a business.
Yeah.
You know, how to deal with customers, how to manage cash, negotiate vendors, all that stuff. And then had the opportunity to kind of learn more about what I really was interested in, because that was more just an opportunity.
Sure.
Being opportunistic. And tech, I've been an early adopter my whole life. And so I had the chance to kind of make a choice, made a conscious decision to leave that industry, not in a, with, you know, running out a burning door, just like, hey, I can be more choosy. So got in tech, built one of the first third-party apps for Twitter, got involved with a fintech startup that's now a really large business, and kept doing that stuff, started teaching a little bit, went back to school, got an MBA, which was rekindled my love for learning because I had a miserable experience, C student prior to that. And the teaching thing, I kept being drawn back to it. So as I was starting businesses and running businesses, eventually the university, Weber State in Ogden, asked me if I'd come start kind of an entrepreneurship program. They'd have one. And so I left. This is my first real job in my whole life.
Yeah.
And my last. And so have been there teaching, but part of the deal was I could still start businesses as long as they were competitive with the university or I didn't hire students. And haven't really done that. I've invested in a few, advised a few, until started a marketplace, actually, evcars.com, that led to EV Auto and me selling, you know, one car at a time, kind of as an experiment that pivoted to why we're here today.
You mentioned
and I got a PhD during that period of time.
No big deal.
No, I just, yeah, that was the original question. So I totally missed that. So
no,
anyway.
But it leads into what I was going to say. You said the word hustle, which, I mean, definitely maps to getting a PhD amidst doing all of that, right? So it's built into your DNA, I'm guessing. Do you feel like you were born with that level of ambition? Is it something that you've learned over the years? Did your parents teach it to you? Where does that come from to be able to just go and tackle something and see it through?
It's probably some of all of those things. I've always been that go-getter, you know, type A, hustler, whatever. That was in the DNA. And some of it was learned or required, moved around a lot. I was always the new kid.
Yeah.
So, you know, that requires just kind of proving yourself over and over again and getting comfortable talking to strangers and that kind of stuff. And my parents were really loving and supportive and encouraging. I would say probably all of those things for sure.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I see the lead up too, right? You go from franchising and restaurants and, you know, call it the hospitality business all the way to owning a dealership. What lessons from that tenure, if you will, even teaching and being a professor, what lessons do you see now have contributed to the foundation of starting a dealership from scratch and in really a new and emerging market?
Well, I want to be clear. I still teach, and I always will. I don't want to. I will never give that up. I don't care how big this business gets. I teach twice a week, two semesters a year. I'm tenured.
Wow.
I love my students. I think it's really important.
Why would you get?
Well, no, I mean, I'm saying I earned that. You know, it's hard to earn.
Yeah, right.
I think tenure is actually not a great concept for a lot of people. Or as soon as I feel like I'm not bringing really current stuff to the classroom, I will fire myself. I will quit. And so, but while I am doing current stuff, I think it's really important to have some professors that can bring that into the classroom.
Wow.
And so I love that I can be like, I did this yesterday in my business, and now we're talking about it today.
That's awesome.
And so I feel a sense of, and I'm grateful to Weber State for supporting me and letting me do both. And so, you know, I think that, tell me your original question. I skipped.
Well, I was asking, you know, what lessons you've learned along
the way
that brought you, that really have bolstered you up starting a dealership from scratch and in a new and emerging market.
Yeah. So the thing that popped into my head is that all profits are not created equally. Some businesses are a lot harder to make money than others. That just popped into my head. I also think that who you work with is different. So, you know, in the tech world, when I had my involvement in those businesses, you're working with salespeople and engineers. And if you're B2B, other businesses and stuff. In the academic world, you're working with students and kind of the bureaucracy of academia and other professors and things like that. And then in the franchise world, it's more, you know, the public or, you know, more blue collar kind of positions and stuff. And there's pros and cons to all of it. For me, my joy and the fun, I love sales. I love people. But I like things that I personally am really interested in.
Right.
So, you know, food's great and everything. I love food and you know, other franchise companies and stuff. But tech and cars are my two, well, you know, fly fishing, golf, great. They're hobbies, you know.
Yeah.
That I'm mediocre at. So the best of all worlds for me. And my very first business was actually a car detailing business.
Oh.
And I that surprisingly just occurred to me not too long ago.
Yeah.
I was like, oh. So I've always loved cars. And I'm not a gas car hater. And so I think there's some issues there. And I've got some real world experience with air quality in Utah during COVID and what I saw there when cars came off the road that changed my view on that stuff in a really strong way. But yeah, I feel like, you know, I'll be 50 in just about 6 months. And I feel like kind of I everything I've done was built for this. Everything I've learned. Not to make it too dramatic.
Yeah.
But that's what
this is, the culmination of my.
It will be my last startup. Like,
was
that I found, and it will be. Because it's.
How did that feel? Did that take a minute to process?
No, I mean, some people are like, yeah, sure, whatever. I'm not saying I will be involved in them, invested in them, advise them.
Well, that's what you do.
But like, it just takes so much of a toll.
Sure.
Personally, family, financially, that I just don't want to do it again. This is the most fun I can have.
Yeah.
At building a business. I know it. And so, and I think we're on to something. And I think it checks all the boxes. And so I'm putting my money where my mouth is and really pushing chips in the middle of the table. And we're going for it one more time.
Yeah, you know, you know better than most people. When you say EV, I mean, we were talking about some of the other EV models before this, but
yeah.
You know better than even I do or anybody at this table or at this conference. When you say EV, people are meaning Tesla.
Yeah.
That's like the first thing that comes to your mind.
Sure. Rightfully so.
Is there anything, any cues that you've taken from Tesla and brought into your business model?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, they have this no-touch kind of purchase process. I don't want to get to that. Actually, it's kind of counterintuitive to being a tech person.
Yeah.
I'm really trying to get people to come in to see us.
Sure.
I'm really trying to get them to come talk to us, which, you know, there's been a trend of pushing towards more the Carvana, the Tesla, where everybody does their research online. They come in, they know what car they want, and that's great. I'm not pushing away from that. But we're kind of saying, we're kind of going back to the old school. And the reason for that is, The vast majority of EV buyers, it's their first one, and they have a lot of questions. And we want them to trust us that we know the answers and we're not going to pressure them to buy a car.
Yeah.
And so they can come in and just talk to us and leave. And they're not going to feel bad about it. And so so that
you have an experience. Like you don't have a typical looking dealership either. I've seen the pictures.
It's fun. Yeah.
It's like a fun experience. It's a destination experience almost.
And that's by design. Like, yeah. We really want it to feel fun and chill and cool and different from not just the way we treat them, but when they walk up, there's this funky rap music or country or whatever playing outside. Then we've got all garage doors, glass garage doors. They're all open when the weather's nice. You can walk in from 20 different ways. And we've got 9 85-inch TV screens that make this TV wall that the Masters might be playing on or whatever. And we've got all these weird treats and drinks. And, you know, it's not just like a Diet Coke and some old popcorn, you know. Right. And then how they're treated. Just, hey, what's up? How's it going?
Chill.
Yeah. You know, we might be sitting on the couch just hanging when they come in. My dog's there all the time. Yeah. And you were sensitive. It's not all people like dogs, but yeah, we just want it to feel different.
I almost caught myself by saying, is that because people know what they want when they come there? And then I was like, wait a minute, any dealership could do this because, like, for heaven's sakes, my 10-year-old daughter knows what a car dealership does.
Hey, before we hop back into this episode of the Dealer Playbook, we got to give a shout out to today's sponsor, AutoFi. AutoFi helps progressive dealers like you sell smarter, not harder, on your dealership website and now in your showroom too. AutoFi solves the everyday problems dealers actually face, like bottlenecks at the sales desk, customer distrust, and decision overload. And their all-new showroom solution includes deal estimation, desking, lender routing, and an F&I menu, all in one powerful platform that bridges the gap between the CRM and DMS. Dealerships with AutoFi can manage the floor more efficiently, fast-track the yes, and make better lending decisions, enabling them to sell cars faster with higher satisfaction and more profit. In fact, deals with AutoFi take an average of 28 minutes from customer check-in to loan approval, and dealers are making $411 more back-end PVR per deal. Go to autofi.com/dealer playbook to learn more. That's autofi.com/dealer playbook and start selling smarter today. All right, let's hop back into this episode.
What's the business case then for saying, hey, like no pressure in an industry where the stakes feel so high all the time, money is like just flying out from every direction. How do you reconcile this need to grow and be profitable with, but no, we're just going to be chill. Like, we're not going to pressure people.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard sometimes because, you know, we're a small business. But I'm really proud of the fact we've been profitable from day one for just over four years.
Awesome.
And so it can, you have to take a long-term perspective. And I have to remind myself of that sometimes. You have to take a long-term perspective. It can't just be about the now and the today and, you know, the stereotypical, what can I do to get you to buy the car today or kind of stuff. And so, and if you believe in that, word gets around. And it will come back to you. And I know the data. I know that we're leaving money on the table right now. We are on the front end and the back end. I know that. But I'm not willing to compromise the experience because I'm in this for the long haul, meaning I believe that over the long term, it will pay for itself and then some. But at the end of the day, I bought so many cars as a customer. So I'm totally new to the car business. I think a lot of car dealers either haven't experienced it or they forget how miserable it can be to buy a car. Like truly as a consumer. Some of them have never done it. They've grown up in the business. They've never really truly done it where they needed the car and they had to get financing and they were at the total whim and will of the dealer. And there are a lot of great dealers out there, but the reputation the industry has earned is largely deserved because there are a lot of bad ones.
Right.
And so I just can't, I don't want to do that. I don't care if I won't make as much money. I won't enjoy it. I know other people don't enjoy it.
Well, and there's value too in this idea of, but if they had a great experience, the more likely they are to share it with someone else and the more likely that someone else is to come in and the cycle starts.
Again, but that's harder to measure in some ways.
Sure.
So it feels like, you know, they can show me data all day long that look at what our F&I guy does and look at, you know, or this and that and the other. And I'm not obtuse to that. I'm not, oh yeah, I don't want to hear it. But again, I just don't want to run a business that operates that way.
Yeah.
I'm just not willing to do that, you know?
Yeah.
And so but I do believe it'll pay. And, you know, our new dealership, our new location's only been open since mid-July. We've got 150 five-star, perfect, detailed reviews written by our customers out of five on every single one of them.
Wow.
And not just read the reviews. Some of them are paragraphs long about how they've never had an experience like this.
Yeah.
And we don't give them anything to do that. we don't give our salesperson, there's no one said, we ask, hey, would you mind, we send them a thing through a Podium that it's automated. Sure, you can ask for it, but I will lose my mind the first day we don't get one. And I know it'll happen eventually, but that to me is everything. Reputation is everything. And we've been tested a few times. I mean, I had to fire a customer for the first time not too long ago that was abusive. And I asked them to leave. And they were going to buy the car. And I said, I'm not selling you the car. I need you to go take your business somewhere else. And that person may choose to leave us a bad review. They haven't yet, but I'm okay with that.
I get comfortable for those, because I know so many people are going, dang, like this, he is firmly rooted in his principles and values and the things that you believe are right and the way you want your mode of operation, so to speak. How do you encourage others to get comfortable sticking to their values and principles no matter what?
In our organization?
Yeah.
So first of all, we're small. And so my general manager and operating partner, Tyler, that's how he's built. And that's why he came aboard. So he views it the exact same way. And Darren, who's does sales with us and helps run the location, same exact way. Our techs, me, we all just believe it. And it's part of our culture and our core values. Number one core value, so we've just been going through an exercise for us, is honesty and integrity in all that we do. And we've got six of them. And one of them that's a little bit further down the list is a unique and wonderful experience, which means they're not going to feel pressured. They're gonna feel, you know, appreciated and educated, and we're grateful they're there. And so these core values, we hire and train. It's how we're measured. It's how we talk about. And there's just a no tolerance issue for it. But I'm really optimistic. I don't think we're gonna hire a lot of people that won't be that way coming in. Now, people make mistakes and stuff, but you know, if they're not incentivized to do that, if they know that, I mean, I want a Nordstrom-like experience. I want to do weird things for people that they're like, you know, you detailed my car.
Yeah.
When I traded it in, and then we had somebody that they were thinking about trading their car and they left it with us for a couple of days. They didn't do it. We detailed it while it was there. And they ended up picking it up. And they're like, you detailed my car? Yeah. How much do I owe you? Nothing. Well, you know, we were hoping you'd do it, but you didn't. No worries. You know, and so we're not going to do that stuff like all the time, but trying to do these little unique things.
Yeah.
Free pickup and delivery. You know, we had somebody just 2 days ago. We do tires, and so they live 45 minutes away from us. They were busy. We said, hey, we'll come out. We'll pick up your car. We'll leave a loaner if you need it. We'll do it. We'll bring it back to you. Oh, yeah. How much does that cost? Nothing. You know, really? Yeah. So they were blown away. We made, you know, $200, right? Who cares? Then we can't do that all the time, but I aspire to. I want to get to the point where we can, you know, scale up enough that we can do that stuff all the time.
Right. And you're doing it in a controlled way because you're able to see in those moments the response.
Well, and we have limited resources, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, we're self-funded. You know, we don't do a lot of the things that other dealers do that, you know, limit our growth, but we're okay with that.
Yeah. Love it. As we wind down, I got one more question. I know they already asked your opinions. I've already brought up, hey, like, when you say EVs, you think Tesla. My wife drives a Model 3, long ranges, that. I've never accelerated. I don't think I've ever accelerated in a vehicle, especially for what you pay for one of them.
Yeah, that's right.
But, of course, you don't just do Teslas. You got all sorts of EV-based models. What are the maybe top one or two that you'd recommend? Like, hey, you've got to check this out. So much fun. Maybe it's fun, performance, style.
Yeah,
like, what are your favorites?
So, I mean, a lot of it's budget oriented, right?
Sure.
I mean, if you have a big budget, you know, I've driven and been around Cybertrucks a lot lately. I had one in our shop, got to drive one for a while. That's a remarkable one-of-a-kind experience. You know, the Hummer truck EV is a blast. Those are the top end, the Porsche Taycan. Porsche Taycan is an amazing vehicle. And then you kind of go into the high five-figure range. The Rivian R1S SUV and Rivian R1T truck are amazing vehicles, beautifully made, especially for a first car, sort of car company. And then as you move down a little bit, you've got so many choices. I mean, the Hyundai Ioniq is cool. The new Kia EV9 is cool. But right now, the thing that's really got me just buzzing are these cars that, so on January 1, the IRS and the government changed the rule that you can use up to $4,000 of your rebate at the point of purchase. So it's like cash.
Oh,
it is like cash.
Wow.
So up to $25,000, you have to meet the income. I think it's under $150,000 a year household income, and a few other requirements, but that's the main one. So you can buy a $25,000 car and have a $4,000 down payment. And so the car costs you $21,000.
Right.
And so we've been selling 2018, 2019, in some cases, Model 3, long range, all-wheel drive, clean title, clean Carfax, really nice cars that people are buying for $21,000. And I would argue there's not more car for the dollar, gas or electric, anywhere.
Wow.
And so that car's, I know at the affordable range, I think it's, I realize I'm biased, but a pretty unbeatable, a remarkable option for people. And we specialize in that. Now, we put our stake in the ground. If you want a cheap, really nice used Tesla, you know, EV Auto. And so we're really pushing some, you can also buy the Hummers and the all that stuff too. But I think this is a game changer.
Game changer.
Yep.
You know what's really weird to me is, so I have a 14-year-old. Now in Canada, where I came from, DP Big Gang, when you turn 16, you can get your learner's permit. You have to have it for 18 months.
Really? Oh, wow.
And then you can get what's called a new driver's license. You have to put this N on the back of your car.
That's actually pretty smart.
And you get that for, I think, another 18 months.
That's
There's some limitations there.
Yep.
Well, when we moved to Texas, I didn't realize that these adolescent
15 years old. Yeah.
And what dawned on me is my 14-year-old is he's right around the corner from his permit.
Yeah.
And what dawned on me is, well, he sure as heck ain't driving my diesel truck. He's not learning to drive on that, which leaves mom's Tesla. His first experience learning to drive a car is an E.
It's gonna haunt him because the speed is gonna be addictive, right?
You have to put the limiter.
Yeah, put the limiter on. Yeah, well, exactly.
What is it? The valet mode? No, well, I can't remember what the.
Yeah, mode valet is. Mode. You can also limit the speed. The top.
Yeah,
speed.
Driver mode. Yeah, that's right. But what a weird thing to think about. Like, his first experience at driving an automobile is going to be in a spaceship.
Well, I mean, number one selling car in the world, Tesla Model Y. Number four selling car in America, Tesla Model Y. And the first three are pickup trucks. So the reality is lots of people are going to be in Teslas.
Wow.
The numbers don't lie, you know?
It's unreal.
Yeah.
Man, this has been so much fun. I can't wait to come to Utah and check out your dealership. One last question.
Might be a second one.
Oh, are you moving south? Are you
not? No, I say yet.
Oh, okay.
But really close to.
I was like, yeah, it's close.
You're first, but really close to it. Oh, South Bar dealership. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no. South Bar dealership. Sorry, but yeah, really close to a new location too. Yeah.
How can those listening and watching get in touch with you?
You know, I personally post on LinkedIn a lot, but I also post a lot of EV content on TikTok and Instagram and Twitter. That's EV Auto Alex. I think my name on LinkedIn.
Sure.
So, and then our website, you know, evauto.com. I don't want to pitch fest, you know, but
yeah,
pretty easy to find.
I love it. Yeah. Appreciate it, man. Thanks,
man.
Thanks
for having me. Podcast. Yeah, appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Dealer Playbook podcast. If you enjoyed tuning in, please subscribe, share, and hit that like button. You can also join us and the DPB community on social media. Check back next week for a new Dealer Playbook episode. Thanks so much for joining.